Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. What a week it was in AEW. We'll take a look at the biggest stories in all of professional wrestling as the course of this show goes on. But obviously, the thing that was on everybody's mind more than anything else this week was the show that Tony Khan and company put together for this past Wednesday's Dynamite. And Tony, to his great credit, arguing hard with the folks at Warner Brothers Discovery for the opportunity to pay tribute to Jay Briscoe and bring his brother Mark onto the show. And as recently as we understand, which is in the Observer this week, by the way, if you're a subscriber at F4WOnline.com, as recently as the day before the show, Warner Brothers Discovery, Les, was apparently still down on the idea of having Mark on the show or even mentioning Jay. And over the course of Tuesday, Tony Khan apparently won them over, and he probably had a lot of help from social media on that.
You know what I would think is one of the things that probably won him over? And I don't know this, and somebody may have reported and I didn't see it, or maybe I'm just speculating, and if I'm speculating, I think I'm right. If you bought the 15-minute overrun, would that persuade you to let me put on what I want to put on?
Hmm.
Because did you see the first commercial ran in that 15-minute overrun?
It was basically commercial free, wasn't it?
Big AEW.
Yeah, that was it.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm figuring he bought it. I mean, if he did, bless his heart. I want to say you've already said it, but yes, I posted it on Twitter and Facebook both. My hat's off to Tony Khan. He will never be my booker, and I probably will never be his. And we certainly won't agree on everything. But yeah, hats off to him putting this on to pay tribute. And, you know, special things like this, the whole industry needs to be aware of and pay tribute. Man, I don't care if it's a guy that's opening the show and has never won a match in his life, or the guy that's closing the show and making $1 trillion. Everybody's putting their health on the line every night to entertain the fans that watch. And they all deserve, you know, to be paid homage to when they pass, and you know, give them credit for what they've accomplished. And I'm, you know, I'm happy that he did that. I got emotional. It was, I barely met the Briscoes before, but I've followed their career, obviously. And I know when, and Lethal and Mark had a hell, and I kept saying they're going to finish with a J Driller, and they did. And with everybody on the stage when they went back up the ramp, I thought that was a great touch. And one of my kids, BJ Whitmer, who's a senior producer there, I saw tears, and you know, he was wiping tears out of his eyes and everything. And I'm, you know, that's what the brotherhood's about, or it should be. And that's, you know, one of the things I think keeps old salts like me wanting to hang around. But yeah, it was a great night for them, and everybody seems to think, wow, they drew a big number, and that's why they drew the big number. That's the match, I think, that did the job. I didn't realize they were going to do the overrun. I hadn't seen that, nor my friend Jim, who came over to watch, and we're watching the clock down. We were watching the girls' match, and I've told you, Jim feels about the women's matches on that show. I go home, but I want to see Lethal and Briscoe. And then we're starting to watch the clock, and he said, what are they going to do, introduce him and then cue out of the show? It looked like that at first. I said, obviously, they've got the overrun. They have to. But, yeah, I think maybe he bought it. But you know, the other thing about the channel, the network, I'm thinking, don't you look at this? It's just a characterization, isn't it? Like a movie? Like a TV series, and you're concerned how this guy is dressed or how he looks. I don't get it.
Well, we do have a little more detail on that, actually, in the Observer. Obviously, the whole thing with Jay was those tweets from years ago, and by all accounts, a lot of people who know him well have vouched for him since then, said they've had conversations with him, including Kerry Silken, who said he believed that Jay was sincere and was not the same guy, and all of that stuff that we heard last week, which I don't doubt. I'll take all their words for it. That was the reason for the Briscoes, but apparently there was still a roadblock in getting Mark on television, because the Briscoes at one particular point in time, and I do recall this, you know, during their, especially during their early years, they used to wear jackets with the Confederate flag on it or carry the flag here and there. And that apparently was a point of contention with Warner Brothers Discovery about having Mark on. And eventually Tony Khan won them over.
All right. Well, good. Why are we still fighting that war? I don't even know. And yeah, but anyway, long story short, I'm happy that it worked. I'm happy they got the numbers. But like I said to you before we, you know, started recording, the numbers are still down from a year ago.
Yes.
And with the 18 to 49 crew, it's down 22% and just down 8.8% period overall from a year ago, the same week. It's going to be, you know, it's the gilds off the lily. The newness is worn off and people are, you know, seeing something that they've seen, and so they're looking for something a little, you know, a little fresher. But you know, I mean, they've still got good people, and they still have some you know, quality stuff. Now, I thought that whole show Wednesday night was okay.
Now, you know what? Before you go into the show, let me jump in and ask you a question about the numbers. Neither one of us are ratings experts, but I do want your opinion on this. The other thing that was going on with this particular show and has been happening really for the last several months is that you remember when we first started these Wednesday night wars that NXT's, the bulk of their viewership was over 50. And one of the real feathers in the cap of AEW was how well they were able to do in that 18 to 49 demographic. It's now the key demographic in all of television. And what we've seen here in AEW over the last several months is that the 50 plus audience is growing and the 18 to 49 has shrunk. And that's something that happened again this week. Now, you know, you can look at this and kind of say, if you're a longtime Ring of Honor fan, you may be near the upper end of that 18 to 49 demo or outside of it, which may explain why that 50 number was up, you know, have something to do with this week's number or why the audience was nearly 67% male this particular week in the key demographic. But this is something, as I mentioned, that has been going on for the last few months. What do you make of the fact that the younger viewers are now not quite as prevalent as they were at the start?
Well, you know, I think part of that is the same reason I've said all along that the Young Bucks are so popular with people, obviously, of their own demographic. Well, they're outgrowing that demographic, but, you know, of the teenagers, of the younger peoples. Is they're the rebels. They're against society or, you know, or the norm. And so, and they are fighting the war for us, you know, meaning us, the young people, you know, to do our own thing. And I think that is what, when AEW first started, well, let's go back to the first show in Chicago, which was the offshoot of the beginning of AEW, you know, the one where Cody wrestled for the NWA title.
You're talking about All In.
Yeah, All In, right. I couldn't remember. I know, to me, wrestling shows are wrestling shows. They have a date. I didn't name all mine when I had HW. I had other things to do. Anyway, AEW was the rebel. They're going in and knock out old man who, you know, and so many of these kids, I think WWE is the villain and Vince is the villain. And they don't, not sure why they think that. It's just, that's, you know, the way they've grown into it basically. And I think now that's changing too, you know? And so the demographic is switching. And so they're picking up some of the older people, and that could be because, they've had a few, there may be some of the Ring of Honor people that had stopped watching Ring of Honor for a while and are actually just gravitating now, to AEW. But yeah, it isn't a kind of a strange switch, but I think that's the reason is, maybe the younger generation is thinking, well, you know, Tony Khan's not waving that rebellious flag anymore, whatever rebellious flag looks like. Am I making any sense?
Yes, but can I posit one more theory and get your take on it?
Sure.
What do you think about the idea that maybe some of the younger viewers have been turned off? And I realize if you hear, you know, you might hear this and think this is a reach. And when I say that, I don't mean you necessarily. I mean the person who is kind enough to be listening to us.
I'm not one of the younger viewers, right?
Exactly. But neither am I, for that matter. But what do you think about the idea that they've thrown cold water at various points over the last 3 years on Jungle Boy? You know, a young, fresh face nobody had seen, who people were very high on. And on Darby Allin, who had a wonderful run, say, about 18 or so months ago, leading up to that first time he won the TNT Championship, and has been sort of in and out ever since, up until the last few weeks. The idea that these were two guys who had not been on national television before, who were young-looking, good-looking, in great shape, and perhaps some of the folks who have been in that younger end of the demo saw them sort of stall out and say, you know, I already know everybody else. How come these new guys that I really like aren't being featured anymore?
Yeah, that's a good theory too, and I really believe that part of yours and part of mine, and maybe a couple that we haven't even discussed or don't even understand, could be the reach. But yes, I think that is very valuable, and is very much a possibility. You know, you mentioned Darby. As I mentioned to you again before we started recording on Twitter this week. In fact, I guess it was just yesterday or this morning. I don't remember. Brian Solomon, who wrote the Sheik biography, which is a great read, by the way, if you get a chance to pick it up, mentioned on Twitter. He said, I like Darby Allin. I really do. But when you put him in against Murphy, I just can't buy that because of the muscularity difference, the size difference. And I just wrote agreed, because I do. And well, you've heard me talk about that here. He's spotting Murphy 50 pounds at least, and he's got a shot. Him and Joe are going to go again, and he's going to be spotting Joe 75 or more,
probably 100.
Yes. So yes, it comes back to my thought process. We buy into movies that are produced properly, and we start believing, and we know they're not real. The same with TV series or good dramatic books, detective stories and stuff. Excuse me. They're not real, but we don't care because they're so well written or crafted if they're on film that we buy in. And wrestling is not, details are not the most important thing in the year 2023 for professional wrestling. And we could sit here and fill the hour with some of the stories about that too. But anyway, yeah, I agree. But you're right about that. I think maybe some of the younger people are saying, well, my guy's not being pushed, so I'm going to check in someplace else. Very, very possible. Now, I'll say this. I thought that the match that opened the show was not very, it was a spot fest and a clown act to a certain degree. Jericho and his, you know, my three sons, we could have named it My Three Sons and started a TV series with it if you want. And I thought, Chris, make them wrestle the way you know how to wrestle and forget you trying to be one of them, please. And I respect the hell out of Chris Jericho. I've said it here before many times. And he's created a hell of a legacy for himself. But yeah, I didn't think that the match, it wasn't a good wrestling match. I'm looking forward to Tim Thatcher and Brian Danielson next week. Hopefully it won't be a punch and kick fest, but both those guys can wrestle their asses off. So I'm hoping that, and I think I'm not sure what I expect out of the Cowboy and Moxley. But I hope it's what I know they both can produce. And again, not just a punch. Let me punch you 100 times, then you punch me 100 times and that sort of stuff. Because that's sort of becoming the norm in AEW now too, is it not?
It is. You know, it's funny you mentioned not sure what to expect from that match. Neither am I from this standpoint. I would have thought, even though the first two matches were on television, that the rubber match might have been maybe something with a stipulation that you could have put on pay-per-view, because they've got one that's not all that far off. And so I'm kind of surprised that they're doing it here. But then again, you could have a non-finish here and bring it back on pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely. Oh, I hate to throw this in right now, but I had wanted to bring it up. My cut and paste guy didn't send me the whole, but sent me the outline. But we had it on the boards on the board today, this week. Somebody came on to try to explain to me why I didn't understand how DAX was about how the pay schedule was for the guys on the lower card. And my cut and paste guy said, the way this guy talks, he's talking like he's a wrestler. Now, he didn't put his name that he uses to sign in, you know, his sign-in name or anything. But the guy is writing to tell me that, you know, these guys pay their own hotel. And I know that. I knew that already. And I don't know why he thought I was being negative about DAX. If you're listening now, I have nothing negative to say about DAX or FDR at all. Believe me. Except that we don't get a chance to hang out. I would love to. But, you know, yes, I had a developmental contract. I know what developmental guys made. I know what the lower card guys made. Yes, they paid their own train. If they want to rent a car, they rented a car out of pocket at the hotel. I realized that. And I also was under WWE contract. Trainers weren't getting rich either, believe me. So, but yeah, I appreciate you writing it, but I'm not sure how I hit a negative comment about DAX because I didn't or didn't mean to. And yes, I understand it's a business and you go where the money is. Anyway, I just want to throw that in. And
well, I'm looking it over now and I'm trying to put this together. It seems not necessarily that it was seen as a negative, but the idea about DAX maybe considering or not considering WWE because Vince was being back at the helm based on, among other things, what they were making in WWE, which was not nearly as lucrative as you might think to be a WWE superstar. So, the way I'm reading this, and, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, sir, on the board in this week's thread, but it sounds to me or reads to me like he's trying to say, you know, one of the reasons DAX may also be considering some other options as opposed to going back to WWE is because, you know, the money he was making there was not exactly what you would think when you hear WWE superstar. Okay. And he also brought up the time Bayley was interviewed on TV as a women's champion, and the host was shocked that she had to pay her own road and travel expenses, drive a rental car, sure, and how much she had to spend. That actually was the beginning of the end. Remember less back in the day for Stacy Keibler when she did Dancing with the Stars, and everybody was just sort of comparing notes on their lifestyle and travel and what happened and what have you. And people were asking about her life on the road in WWE. And every single one of those stars basically went to Stacy after she explained that and said, you got to get out of there.
Yeah, I was going to say, whoever wrote that piece for the board, nobody had to tell me that professional wrestlers, no matter how much they make, are the least paid, the most underpaid of, whether you're talking about entertainers or professional athletes or a combination of both. So, yes. Nobody had to make me aware of that. I happened to be one of those for a while. But, yes, I see the point. Yeah, and you're right, Stacy Keibler. In fact, it was George Hamilton that brought it up to her.
That's right. That's right.
You need to get an agent or something. I forget what the deal was, but, yeah. Yeah. And, yes, you know, and I've said this before on interviews with somebody. I said, do you think the business owes you a living? I don't hesitate. Yes, I do. And let me put that in perspective for you. I think the business owes Steve Austin. I think it owes Brock Lesnar. I think it owes whoever. If you have put in the kind of time, dedication, physical, mental, spiritual, whatever that we have put, and I say we because I conclude myself, you're damn right the business owes it because them promoters made a hell of a lot more money than we did. So, yeah. But yes, we it's a shame there's not a union, but there's not, or that congressman was going to go about the independent contractor thing to the government and skewer that. I wish he would have, because that's the most asinine designation I can think of. I'm an independent contractor. I can do whatever I want, except here's this 45-page contract that you need to read and sign. And if you go to the bathroom wrong, we can fire you.
Yeah.
And suspend you, and you can't work for anybody else for a year.
Nor can
I'm an independent contractor.
Maintain my own fan site where people pay me monthly to see pictures and find out what I'm doing.
Yeah, right. So, no, we all used to be independent contractors, completely independent contractors. That is no longer the case. Believe me, it's not, unless you're working on an independent show. And some of them have contracts. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's I'm sorry. I didn't mean to misconstrue my thoughts on Dax. And if I did, I'm sorry. But, yes, I understand how poorly wrestling talent is paid. Been there, done that. And so anyway, we can move on. I just wanted to mention that I hope I didn't offend somebody or offend Dax, because I damn sure wouldn't want to do that.
So we were talking about our thoughts on Moxley and Page, but you also talked about how you hope that Danielson and Thatcher will have the time to put in a professional wrestling match. And I wanted to take the opportunity to actually say something nice about the Booker of the Year. This is his week, buddy. Let me tell you, I want to pat him on the back for something that I caught over the course of this show, and perhaps you did as well. I think they'll get the opportunity to have a wrestling match, Will Bryan Danielson and Timothy Thatcher, because they kind of set up the story of the match here on this particular program. Danielson gets the win over Cage, but then in the post-match, he gets his arm posted with the chair and all that other stuff, and Takeshita comes down and makes the save. But you know, when Thatcher is introduced in that backstage promo from MJF, what's the footage they use? Him winning a match with the Fujiwara armbar. So clearly, Thatcher's going to be coming for that arm.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you know, so we were talking about the fall-off in crowd. Here could be some of the fall-off, because I watch because I you know, my heart's in the industry, whether I like everything I see or not. I watch because we do this show, and I do other interviews, and I still try to teach. But guys like Bryan Danielson are doing jobs. Why? And that's the only thing. Why? There is no, I mean, this guy should, and you, some of these kids that are on dark matches, or some of Jericho's children, that he would like to get some, actually work with wrestlers and wrestle a little bit, get Danielson over those guys, or the Cowboy, or whoever, you know. But that, now you stop and think about that too. Dan, you and I look at Bryan Danielson as a top guy.
Yes.
But stop and really focus on how he has been used in the last few months. Is he being used like a top guy?
No, and I think actually what we've been seeing these last few weeks is a recognition of that. I remember us talking about this not all that long ago, how it drove me nuts to see Danielson continually losing in these bigger matches. What we've been getting here with MJF and this lead into their match is Danielson winning week after week. I think maybe somebody kind of looked at that and recognized it, whether it was Tony himself or MJF or even Bryan Danielson saying, hey, if we're going to do this title match, I got to get in a little bit of a run here. So how can we put this together?
Yeah. Yeah. It's and that could be a part of the drop off with fandom as well. I don't know. But, you know, I know this after going on 63 years, this crazy industry, it don't take a lot to piss off the fans sometimes.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it really doesn't. And that's surprise. You know, and back when fans were wrestlers more accessible to fans, and fans, you know, really would talk, you know, like, hey, I really like this or I didn't like that. I'm talking back in the 60s, 70s, and into the at least the mid 80s and late 80s probably, before all security fences and all that sort of thing. Fans would tell you, I didn't, you know. That just made me think, when Danny Miller and I went back into the Carolinas in 1971, I had left there in 68. And so I went back in 71. I had a mustache and hair over my ears, which I didn't have either one when I left there in 68. And I remember some of the older fans that would come up and talk to you, you know, when you're standing outside the dressing room or on your way in or out of the building, saying, well, I'm so glad to see you back, Les. But, wow, I don't know about that hair and that mustache. You know? And, yeah, So we love your wrestling, but we're not happy with your hairstyles, you know. But so, yeah, little things like that will tend to, you know, pick at a wrestling fan as well. So there's all sorts of things.
Okay, let's see. Where was I going here? Because I wanted to stay on AEW.
Did I take you off track? I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. I was my computer kind of went sideways on me here, and I wanted to make sure I got to something in particular. Where was it? Oh, I did want to make mention. You know, you and I talked about this actually off the air. The fact that there's a memorial T-shirt out there raising money for Jay Briscoe's family.
Right.
Reach for the Sky shirt, which looks great, by the way. It's available through Shop AEW and Shop Honor on Pro Wrestling or Pro Wrestling Tees for $24.99. And all of the proceeds go to benefit the Briscoe family. So if you haven't already got one and you're inclined to help the family out in any way, shape, or form, that would be a great way to do it.
Yeah, I said to you, I'd like to have one. I thought those were cool shirts.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great that everybody was wearing those last night and everything, too. Yes, well done. Well done.
Now, with respect to the rest of this show, was there someplace in particular you wanted to go after talking about Moxley and Page, or do we want to tackle something else?
You're leading. I'm just along as your dance partner.
All right, then let's take a look at what we've got already set up here. We talked about Page and Moxley next week for Dynamite, and obviously Danielson and Thatcher, where it figures to be Thatcher going after that arm and Danielson trying to figure out how he can survive in advance with one wing damaged. The Acclaimed in action, thankfully, better than family
yes,
therapy.
Yes, they're going to scream. Yeah, right.
Listen, I'd rather hear that than another therapy session. Darby Allin and Joe now. Joe getting his rematch. He obviously promised pain, blues, and agony for young Darby. But Darby just got this thing back, and he's already had a handful of successful defenses. Do you anticipate this going back to Joe? Because I don't.
I don't either, but it should. Yes.
I'll give you a scenario, you know, though. Maybe this is
made Tommy... Go ahead.
No, finish your thought, please.
I was going to say, what made Tommy Rich so valuable to Georgia Championship Wrestling back in the day was the fact that he would get to that brass ring, but he couldn't. Those dastardly villains who were older and bigger would take it away from him. That's what Darby, instead of Darby beating guys that are outweighing him by 50 to 100 pounds, Darby should be looking like he's going to beat those guys and them getting by him, and he could be working. You know, back in the day, he could have worked to build to title, to getting to a title and maybe beating Joe and then Joe getting it back at some point. But he could have worked angles with a bunch of these guys and come back and had 2-3 matches to get to this point. But that's, again, one of my shortcomings with the industry as a whole at this point in time, is everybody seems to be double parked in a rush. You know, and making people anticipate and want something makes it better when you give it to them. And it just seems like everybody's so, we got numbers right here, quick. Here's an angle. Whoop. Les and Vic have been partners for 15 minutes. Okay, it's time for Vic to turn heel. They didn't give us a chance to even get over as a team, you know. But that's what I see there too, you know, is the big, you know, Darby needs to be a sympathetic babyface, if for no other reason but because of his size. And how sympathetic can you be about a guy that beats the shit out of a guy that's 100 pounds bigger than him?
I was going to say, maybe, and this is something I really need an explanation from the Booker of the Year about, it's been a great mystery to me that we haven't seen Wardlow since he got his man bun cut. But maybe old Darby gets a little help from Wardlow in this match, and then we move to Joe and Wardlow trying to get his revenge.
That would be cool. That would be a good transition. And there's another case. There was a fresh guy. With the first time I saw Wardlow, I said, damn, he's got a great look. He needs some seasoning, and he still does. I mean, the last 3 years hasn't turned him into a seasoned veteran in any way, shape, or form. And believe me, folks, my standards are probably higher than the average fan, much higher, and a lot higher than some of the writers. But yeah, that's, you know, would have been worked out so well. Well, when I see Brian Cage and Brian Danielson, that's a mismatch in terms of size as well.
You know, when you look at that one, though, you can actually, you can, well, I put it like this. I won't put words in anybody else's mouth. I will say, looking at that size difference, I can believe that Bryan Danielson can out-wrestle and outsmart the man into a three count at some point, or wear him down.
Yes.
Because
yes,
of the kind of wrestler he is. You know, I see him getting bounced around for most of the match, but he would be able to outquick or outsmart him at some particular point in time to be able to escape.
Right. Right. No, you're absolutely right. That is true. And each scenario depends on the two people that are in, the two wrestlers that are involved. Mm-hmm. But then that is Booker of the Year or Booker of the Century or the Booker of yesterday. I don't know, whatever you want to call him. His job or any other body, anybody that's a writer or, you know, a booker is to build, make the people want, you know, and make, you know, and build to that climax. And they're just in a big hurry to, you know, and I understand ratings, but again, you know, it comes down to trying to put 10 pounds in a 5 pound package. And Mike Mondo about NXT, slow down. Yes, that's part of the deal too. You know, give people a chance to absorb, your stories. If you watch a good TV series, and I know you do, I do. Before we go for commercials where they're about to tell you who killed the person. Whoa, now we're going to come. Okay. We got to be there when they come back. Wrestling should be built the same way. I don't care if it's 1 hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours on television or a live house show. It should be built the same way.
Cannot disagree with that. We are mere moments away from getting a little confirmation that I feel pretty good about, Les. We're going to hear or read some comments from, share with you, from somebody inside WWE who thinks a lot of the same things, at least on this one particular issue, that most of us outside WWE do. And that is, why we got all these one-name guys running around? It doesn't make sense. So we'll talk about that in a second, but I want you to have the opportunity to talk about, since you mentioned some of your time as a trainer in WWE and HWA and what those developmental guys were making and things like that, to talk about some of the incredible footage that is available out there now from your time running the Heartland Wrestling Association.
Yeah, if you'd like to see some of that footage from the HWA when we had the developmental contracts, you can get the Lost Development, I can't talk today, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2. It's over 6 hours of content on each, and both are two DVD sets. There's matches and interviews and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. Joe, most of the play-by-play, me with these stories from behind the scenes, an evaluation of the talent. And those, and by the way, Joe says by WrestleMania, he's figuring to have Volume 3. On the shelves and ready to go. But you can get the copies of 1 and 2 from joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And you're going to see guys on there that you're, you know, like Cena and Randy Orton and situations like that. And some of these same developmental guys were in the Pillman shows in 98, 99, 2000, and 2001. And you can see them on the Brian Pillman shows anthology, the 20th anniversary. It's a 4 DVD set, 15 hours of content, all 4 of those great shows I just mentioned, and matches, interviews, awards, and plenty of extras. Those can be picked up at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses I mentioned earlier, Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com. And I want to mention while we're on comms and things like that, that Stories with Briscoe and JBL that I did 2 hours of last week dropped last night on their YouTube channel. So if you get a chance, check it out. We had a lot of fun with it, laughed a lot, and got into some good history stuff.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to checking that out this weekend. I'll have plenty of time because the NFL and these damn championship games not starting until 4 o'clock. They're killing me with that. But in any event,
I would like all of you to join me in cheering for the Bengals, please.
So we are switching the scene here to WWE on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And I had a little fun with it before you got into talking about HWA and such. Triple H talking to ESPN about Austin Theory And one of the things about giving him his first name back, talking about how it was just weird to hear him announced as Theory, like that, what doesn't make any sense to him? Well, us either, Triple H. And he talked right. about how, you know, is that Stone Cold Steve Austin? Is that really confusing for fans? I mean, if you don't know the difference between Austin Theory and Stone Cold Steve Austin, that's a whole different problem. So that's one of the theories. Yeah, funny. That's one of the reasons he put his first name back on him. But part of the reason, the real reason I bring this article up and just pause to have a little fun with the first name thing is because of the amount of people featured in this article about Austin Theory on ESPN's website, where not only does Triple H praise Theory's potential to be one of the biggest stars in the industry, you've got quotes really, you know, making this kid look like $1 million in terms of his potential and what they expect of him from The Undertaker, from Bobby Lashley, not just from Triple H and Paul Levesque. He also got something from Brock Lesnar. Now, Brock did not actually talk to ESPN. Come on now. But Theory spoke about receiving advice from Brock after Elimination Chamber last year. Theory talks about the fact that Brock pulled him aside to watch some stuff with him and give him some critiques. And that, as we all know, if you spend any time following this business or around Brock Lesnar, you know that that's not something he normally does. So the idea that Brock Lesnar was going to take some time out of his day to be there in enough, you know, early enough or not off to himself enough to take this young man and say, hey, let's check this out. There's a couple of things I'd like to talk to you about. That's a big deal for Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And I, you know, I agree with these guys too. And I, like I mentioned to you before we started recording, I remember seeing, Austin Theory, very first was on, Evolve, Gabe Sapolsky's, promotion before he had closed it down. And I was thinking, man, this kid's got potential. And he was, you know, wasn't green as grass necessarily, but he needed a lot of work. But he is growing. I've seen that since he's been with WWE. But yeah, you know, if all the pieces of the puzzle are put together, he gets the right push, gets the right guys and everything. Yeah, I can see him being a big guy in this business for quite some time. And yeah, if Undertaker speaks up like that, and you're right about Lesnar, he's not known to go out of his way for the things like that. But yeah, so yeah, I can see that. And I'm like Triple H. I never saw the reason for going to one name anyway. It just made no sense to me.
I'm sure a lot of folks thought something special about Theory when, you know, basically that was Vince McMahon's last role on television. He had Theory hitched to him. But, you know, I was interested in seeing those quotes in that article simply because clearly it's not just a Vince mandate. You look at the names of these Hall of Famers, basically, who are telling you that this guy is, in fact, something special. It wasn't just some random thing from Vince, or it wasn't just like he's got his latest favorite. There's a pretty good consensus of some incredible veterans who think that this guy is going places and is special.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And if there's a category for who to watch in 2023, Austin Theory would be one of them.
So several years ago, when Steve Austin was doing his podcast on the WWE Network, so he had the video interviews, he talked to Brock Lesnar, and they had a terrific conversation. But at the end of it, Vince McMahon was furious, Les. You might remember this, because at some point in the podcast, or in the interview, I should say, they kind of went back and forth on the idea of Steve Austin versus Brock Lesnar. And Vince immediately, when the show was over, asked Steve, you feeling good enough? You want to do that match? Is that something that's happening? And Steve was like, no, man, I'm not coming back. And then Vince blew a stack, like, why are you promoting a match we're not going to have? Funny that here we are a few years later, actually quite a few years later. Apparently, according to Dave's reporting on Wrestling Observer Radio earlier this week, Les, Steve Austin was offered the opportunity to wrestle Brock Lesnar at this year's WrestleMania. You know, another site, Fightful, had reported earlier this week that they offered Steve Austin Roman Reigns, and Dave said that's what he heard is not the case, that he was offered Brock Lesnar, which is not happening, at least not at this moment, but had been talked about for quite some time, apparently, behind the scenes in WWE. I'm looking at that a couple different ways. We know that Austin came out of last year's WrestleMania with Kevin Owens feeling pretty good about what he had to offer and was open to doing it again. I'm not sure the guy I would ever pick for him to wrestle in his current, at his age and his state of health, no matter how good he feels, is Brock Lesnar. At the same time, if there's anyone Brock Lesnar would go out of his way to take care of, I would think it'd have to be Steve Austin. But if I'm Steve, I'm still not taking my chances.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, the one thing I like about that particular match, again, you know, I don't believe in the statement that everybody in this business makes. The fans are all smart. No, they're not. They're fans. But what I'm about to say is a good thing they're fans, but they are smart enough to realize if you bring Austin back to work with Roman, Austin's not going to win.
Right.
It's just like you didn't expect Goldberg to win when he came back. You wouldn't expect a Taker, if he were to come back at this point, especially since he's been out. I'm sure he's not. But Brock against Austin, you realize neither one of these guys are full-time on the roster, so you won't be able to call the finish before it gets there. So it could have a little more mystery to it than, you know, bringing one of those guys back for one shot against a guy who is full-time on the roster. So it could be more beneficial to WWE as a drawing card, opposed to just being, you know, somebody I'm excited to see because it's on the card, not because
yes.
I think it's going to really help draw.
That's it. It's a match you can have on a big show that's in a total vacuum. The next guy is, you know, that's not necessarily the next number one contender at the next pay-per-view the following month. Lesnar comes and goes as he pleases, and you can insert him in the main event anytime you want, no matter what happens at WrestleMania. But no one's there to believe that this is like a top contenders match or anything like that. It's just two guys who've been big stars for a long time having a match against each other, as opposed to wrestling someone who's maybe on the way up or someone who you think is going to be a star who ends up getting his ass whipped and then they're never taken seriously again.
Yep, absolutely, yeah. So in that case, it could be more valuable. Because I think when you know a match is a one-shot, you know, one and done, you know, it's... You kind of know when you know that the match is won. You kind of know who's going to be the winner, whether it's by disqualification or pound out or pin or whatever. So yeah, I would think there'd be more mystery to Austin and Brock than there would be to Austin and Roman.
So we have quite rightly spent an awful lot of time when we discussed WWE talking about how great the Bloodline is. And I think they delivered again on Raw, and Raw delivered incredible numbers by modern standards for the rating this week on their 30th anniversary show. Obviously, they brought out a lot of big guns, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, The Undertaker, DX. But the trial of Sami Zayn this week, Les. Now, I know you were going to make a critique, not necessarily about the segment, but about something you mentioned to me off the air about the amount of times now Roman appears to be at odds with Sami, which I agree with. But your thoughts on the segment itself and the way it was actually Jey Uso who brought things back together.
I thought it was great. First of all, I knew the audience was going to back Sammy. But the Jey thing was, you know, was a surprise to everyone, I think. And the way he did it, his pitch was great. Sammy's surprised. Roman is most definitely surprised. And I think the way Roman came out of it, because, you know, in the past when he's, for, you know, like when, okay, like Brock or Heyman says, maybe you should have him on our side instead of, you know, having him out there flow. Okay, so he approaches Sammy with a smile and everything. And so probably most of the fans and I was thinking, okay, we're going to see that, you know, hey, well, you know. But we didn't see that, did we?
No.
He laid down stipulations. And, okay, I see that. Obviously, the building, there was no doubt in my mind the building was going to erupt and back Sammy. But then the Jey thing was totally out of left field, which was great. But, yeah, my minus, if there is a minus to any of this, and it wouldn't be the Bloodline storyline the last 2 years or the way it is built and the guys have worked their asses off to make it work. But I think this, I love the deal where it looks if I'm just a fan, well, this is where Roman's going to kick Sammy the curb. He's going to beat Sammy's butt or whatever. And then Roman, you know, forgives him or brings him back into the fold or whatever. It's, you know. But I think now, can't do that every week. Now is where you need to give the fans a few weeks to forget that you have, you've been forgiving him every week virtually, and it's worked. Now's the time to let it rest and let everything run at an even keel before you try it again. Because if it starts to be a part of every bloodline segment, every year, every week, you're going to lose your people. I'm not saying everybody's going to turn their back or anything, but it's like my friend Jim when he sees two girls in an AEW ring. Okay, I'm going home. I've seen this. Or he gets crazy if he sees two tag teams against each other too many times when there's not a strong storyline. And I can't disagree with that. So that's what I don't want to see here, because I really love the storyline. I think everybody, all the players in it have done admirably well. And I just, you know, I hope that continues.
Yeah, when it happens, and it does seem now like when and not if, it should be something that neither Sammy nor the people see coming.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Should come out of left field. Those are the story. Well, let's. Something I saw, and somebody put the video up, anniversary or something of Hogan turning to the end up being on the NWO side on WCW. Did that blow the roof off that building?
Oh my goodness, forget it.
Yes, they were people throwing garbage in the ring, chairs and every damn thing else. That is maybe the best example of what surprise will do if it's done properly. You saw Nash and jump out of the ring. Scott Hall jumps out of the ring like, and they're making, oh my God, Hogan's out here. And all of a sudden, Hogan drops that leg on Randy. What? What? And then here comes Nash and Hall back in the ring. And that was great. I didn't see it coming. And that's what made it work so well. So that's my point. And I think that's as good an example as I can bring up, wouldn't you?
I mean, there's no better example, I think, perhaps, well, certainly in the modern history of wrestling, but maybe ever in this crazy business. I want to ask it's something we discussed last week, and maybe going forward from week to week until they actually put a date and time on the match, because, you know, I do feel it's now going to happen whether we were ready for it to happen or not. The Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn for the entire WWE Championship, WWE title and the Universal Championship. We had seen some plans, and we talked about this as well, that it was Owens at the Rumble, and they had Zayn earmarked for February's pay-per-view, which had typically been the Elimination Chamber show. Don't know if that's still on the books for this year or not. Forgive me. I don't have that off the top of my head. But in terms of this match, there was a lot of people this week, particularly after that segment, who were excited about the idea of, especially since there seems to be no big name opponent on the horizon for Roman Reigns, to push this off between Roman and Zayn until WrestleMania and have that match there. What do you think about that now?
I think the match, well, I think they should have a hell of a match. And if I were the agent, I would want, I mean, obviously Sammy's expected to be nervous because he's always nervous around Roman, but I think if Roman sets out to embarrass Sammy early in that match, and at some point Roman does something that just throws a switch in Sammy's head that says, screw you. You know, you are embarrassing me. I am embarrassed. And Sammy lights him up like a Christmas tree. That building would come frigging unglued. But Roman's going to end up winning it and healing his way to win it. And it shouldn't be the Usos or Soto or Paul or anybody else, but just those two guys. And I think if you build a match that way, can you visualize what I'm saying?
I absolutely can. I think, you know, what I want to get from you on that, because I don't doubt that match is going to work anywhere they decide to do it, but they apparently have it earmarked for February. And as I told you last week, with Cody declaring for the Rumble and these wonderful packages that they've been running week after week, you know, my expectation is that he wins the Rumble and gets the match with Roman, since The Rock apparently is not going to be available this year. But now, looking at what they've done and adding that trial this week to the pile of great things that they've done with this dynamic, is Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn a WrestleMania top of the card worthy match for you?
I don't know if it's the top, but it sure is one of them, I would think, at this point. I mean, well, you know, we talked about the way the crowd erupted and supported Sammy on Monday night, this past Monday night. I think that pretty much tells you where Sammy stands with the fans, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and it's not, you know, the crazy thing is, it's not they think he's a great wrestler or a great, you know, it's just the storyline itself and the way it is built. And so, it's not that they think he's a great wrestler. They love him for just being the person that he is, and they support him. And that maybe is a stronger baby face than the guy who is, well, you know, let's say with Drew McIntyre and him and Roman, you're two bulls, right? And you won't, that's not what you're going to see with Sammy. And if Sammy gets the better of Roman, and he has to in this match at some point, I don't want to see just a beat down for 3 or 4 minutes and the bell ring and go home. That would be a waste of their time. But, yeah, Sammy gets, like I say, when that light bulb goes off in Sammy's head and he's able to convey that without words to the audience, and here I go, man, I've got this, okay, I've found an opening. I've got it. I'm going to beat the hell out of Roman Reigns. But Roman beats him as a heel. You know, I mean, heel some way and steals it from him. But he steals it. More heat on Roman. And Sammy is still over, even with that loss. And is can start working a program with somebody else and be a value in the middle of the show somewhere.
So let me pitch this idea to you that just popped into my head while you were talking, and we'll wrap it here on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. A couple of years ago, New Japan took their biggest show of the year, the January 4th Tokyo Dome event, and spread it out over 2 nights, which is apparently where WWE got the idea to do it themselves, and they did that for the first time last year. And in that situation with New Japan, there was basically a 3-person issue over the IWGP Championship. But rather than have a 3-way, the champion defended against one of the guys on the first night, and then the winner wrestled the third guy on the second night. What about Cody still winning the Rumble and challenging for the title? Since this is a 2-night event, Roman gets Sammy on night 1, walks in maybe a little beat up for Cody on night 2.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, that would work. That would work, yes. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, if they're going to copy New Japan, they could copy him in that manner. You know, the one thing I don't like to see is, okay, if Vic beats Les tonight, then Vic gets to wrestle the champion tonight. I know it's all a work, but we don't need to promote it as all a work. Hey, the champion can have 16 matches tonight, and it's all right because he doesn't wear out. But you see what I'm saying? I know it's not real, everybody that's listening to us, but the whole idea is if you're good enough, you make the people buy in and draw them in and make them suspend their disbelief. So that's the way I've always looked at the business in my lifetime, and it's the way I expect everybody else to, and I realize they don't, but yes. And again, that comes back to bringing you to a spot where you're surprising the people with something opposed to stealing something, you know, instead of advertising it 6 weeks out, right? Well, Roman hurt his arm and he's still okay, but you know, this and this and he drops the tie, you know, and he's hurt his arm 3 weeks before that big match with Cody. Okay, so Cody wins, so it's no big surprise.
Right. See, in this scenario, you know, everybody gets a little something. In that,
yes.
Cody comes back after injury, which is a great story in and of itself. He beats the guy who literally has not been beaten in more than 2 years. He becomes the champion, fulfills the dream that his father got close to but never quite was able to accomplish. And Roman can show up the next night on Monday Night Raw or any other show he wants over the next, who knows, 6 months. And talk about how unfair this was because he had to wrestle twice that weekend and Cody didn't, and he got screwed.
Right. Yeah. You've given him an escape.
Yes.
A verbal escape anyway. And yeah. And you know what? We're sitting here thinking about something that's going on in WrestleMania, but you know what? This is the way the great bookers and the boys work in the top slots years ago. You didn't take 30 seconds to come up with this. It took days, sometimes hours, weeks, whatever, you know, but you build it, you made it work, and you did it so the people didn't see it coming. I like it. You want to be Booker of the Year?
You know what? I'd be willing to throw my name in the ring.
I'll vote for you.
No. If they hire me, you're coming with me.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I could use the money.
So we're winding down this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly after booking our own personal, I guess, win the wrestling lottery here as now a booker and co-booker or something. That's a committee that would win. Two people, I think, for the most part. We saw Jado and Gato make that work for so many years in New Japan. Why not us? But yep. Before we wrap this one, you talked about having the opportunity to sit down with Jerry Briscoe and JBL, which is on YouTube now for anybody who wants to check it out. You and Jerry Briscoe were in business together many years ago, and that spawned the very first professional wrestling t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. And you can get a copy of that t-shirt at Pro Wrestling Tees if you like. And the t-shirt he's talking about. And we talk about that on there too, about the other shirts we tried later and, you know, all the problems with getting the shirt sold. And then once promoters realized there's money to be made here, they wanted a piece of the action that they didn't want anything to do with to begin with. But yeah, it's a Briscoe Booster t-shirt. And it was the first t-shirt, wrestling t-shirt ever on the market. We put it out in 1972, Jack, Jerry, and myself. And you can get that at Pro Wrestling Tees. Also, if you happen to be a Les Thatcher guy, they have an I'm a Les Thatcher guy t-shirt there as well. But yeah, that Briscoe Booster tee was the first ever, and we're very proud of that. And yeah, we talk about that extensively on the show. So yeah, check it out. And I won't surprise you, but JBL's introduction for me at the top of the thing is kicks it off and raunchy style. we liked it. I think you will as well.
And the opportunity to train with you is still available for folks, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. I'd love to be doing one-day seminars or weekend training camps. And if you're interested in checking that out, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to, send you out the information, and hopefully we can put something together.
All right, brother, we're going to wrap up this edition with Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly with that. I want you to have the rest of the weekend to psych yourself up and get ready for that big AFC Championship game.
Yes, sir.
So for the legend, Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend a little bit of it here with us. And we are looking forward to talking to you again next week, hopefully with the Bengals getting their second consecutive Super Bowl, or we might not be able to get a show out of our resident legend.
There you go. Yes, sir. Yeah, you guys have a good weekend. If you're traveling, be safe out there.